Galactic Journey, November 30th, 1958, to the Moon, Alice, wrap-up of the January 1959 Astounding, and more. I promised a wrap-up of this month's Astounding, so here it is. Study in Still Life by Astounding's resident satirist Eric Frank Russell. It is a 20-page depiction of governmental bureaucracy whose only connection, I should say connection with an X, Russell is British, with science fiction is its having been printed in a science fiction magazine. I'm sure some find tedious depictions of tedium humorous. I just find them tedious. Oh well. This makes the January 1959 issue of Astounding the worst in quite some time, with the exception of the lead story, which is undoubtedly good but not exceptional, and the brief seedling, the book was a bore. 2 stars at most. Still, it did inspire a think. I like my science fiction with a ton... I like my science fiction with a touch of verisimilitude. One of the tropes I find tiresome is the spaceship as automobile trope, particularly the one man builds a rocket ship in his backyard and flies it to the moon story. Now, I have no doubts that the space age will have spaceship pilots, and they may well be a rare breed. I also don't have too much trouble swallowing the idea that, in the far future, spaceships may be as reliable as the present-day automobile. But for the foreseeable future, spaceships and their atmospheric cousins, airplanes, are incredibly finicky beasts that require dozens of hours of prep time for every hour of flight. The recent Pioneer launches had crews topping 100. Manned jaunts are sure to require more crew, and a lunar shot will have, I'll bet, thousands of people involved. A few authors have gotten it right. I recently read Satellite E1 by Jeffrey Lloyd Castle, which is half textbook, half British wish fulfillment, and it does a good job of depicting the long logistical tail any expensive high-tech aeronautic project has or will have. I blame World War II, specifically post-war depictions of the war. We've gotten used to the tales of doughty pilots soaring into the skies on a moment's notice, and we've forgotten just how much sweat goes into building and maintaining the crates. Movies don't get made about mechanics, any more than they get made about quartermasters and cooks. And so science fiction stories not only fail to depict their space-age counterparts, they omit them entirely. I think that's too bad. While the general public may like reading stories of plucky rocket jocks making it to the moon on ingenuity and baling wire, I think a far more meaningful story is made when the spaceships sent to the moon, hopefully with more than just one person inside, have thousands, if not millions of people behind them as part of the effort. It's like a mountain, with the spaceship comprising just the very top, and the rest being not just the people who were directly involved in building and supporting the ship, but a collective effort representing all of humanity. By the by, the Air Force may have failed in America's first attempts toward the moon, Pioneer 0 through 2, but it looks like the Army plans to launch a probe on a modified Jupiter IRBM next week. I think their odds are pretty good. Their Juno 2 rocket is identical to the Jupiter C that launched Explorer, at least from the second stage up, and I understand the Jupiter to have a decent record. Moreover, the probe is smaller and less sophisticated than its Air Force predecessors, and von Braun said there is no intention of hitting the moon or sending it into orbit. A near miss will be good enough. I suppose if one sets the bar low enough, it's hard not to clear it. I shall cross my fingers, toes, and eyes. The original written article, linked stories, and images can be found at galacticjourney.org by Gideon Marcus.